We'll start with invocation prayer and then we'll continue with our discussion. So if you have your paper sheets or if you are memorized by now, so you can recite with me. Namo Vishnupadaya Krishna Prishthaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swaminiti Namine Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschatya Deshatarine Namo Mahavadanyaya Krishna Prema Pradayate Krishnaya Krishna Chaitanya Namne Gaurakshe Namah Pancha Tattvatmakam Krishnam Bhaktarupa Swarupakam Bhaktavataram Bhaktakhyam Namami Bhaktashaktikam He Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dinabandhu Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vancha Kalpatrubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Bhyevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadha Shivasadi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare 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 Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare So we'll discuss the topic, Who Am I? So in the first session, if you remember, we discussed the purpose of human life, having taken a human birth. The first and foremost duty is to inquire. And then we discussed inquire about what? So the inquiry should be, who am I? What is everything around me? What is this nature? What is my relationship? What is my role here? So the first question starts with, who am I? So that's the topic we are going to discuss today. So, or we can say, what is the concept of body, mind and soul? How does it fit into this scenario of who am I? Now when Krishna started speaking this knowledge to Arjuna, the first and foremost thing what Krishna spoke was, what is our real identity? Who we are? Right? Isn't that a little ironical that when Krishna started speaking, when Arjuna surrendered, Shishyasteham Shadimam Tvam Prapannam, I am surrendered soul unto you, now please instruct me. And Krishna, the first knowledge Krishna gave was our real identity. Who am I? Who we are? No, why is it so important to know who we are? Or why Krishna chose to speak this subject as the first instruction, who we are? Why not something else? Why not about Karma Yoga or Jnana Yoga or something else? Why Krishna chose to speak about the identity first? So basically, to know our identity is very important. If you, all, most of us came from India. So when you first entered USA, right, when you get down from your airplane, you get into the line of immigration clearance, what do they ask first thing? Show me your identity, right? They will ask for your passport, they will ask for your visa. So they will ask for your identity, who you are. How have you come here? What is your plan here? What are you going to do here? So we have to know our identity in Russia or in some other communist countries, you have to carry your passport all the time. Wherever you go outside the home, you have to always carry your passport. If you don't have your passport, your identity to show, they can put you in jail. So it's very important to prove our identity or to know our identity. Another example, so you work in a particular company, so you know, but let's say generally if somebody pushes you inside an office and say, okay, go, do something. You'll say, okay, first tell me, who am I in this company, in this office? Am I the CEO of this company? Am I the manager? I'm the engineer? I'm the peon? Who am I in this company? If I know who am I, then I can act accordingly, according to that position. So knowing our identity is very important. So that's why Krishna spoke the nature of soul or our real identity as a first and foremost topic. So in general, Krishna spoke that we are not this body, we are the spirit soul. Right? Now when Krishna spoke this knowledge to Arjuna, the cultural background or the background was such that all these things were inherent, right? People believed in the existence of soul or the principle of karma, principle of reincarnation. People had the faith in God, existence of God and all that. But today when we spoke about these topics, people don't even have complete faith or enough faith to understand. People may not believe in the soul. People may not even believe in the existence of God. What to speak of, who is God? And people may completely say, oh, I don't believe this soul business and all. I don't believe there is life after death. So, when we discuss these topics, in this scenario, we go with very basic knowledge first. To bring people to that level where we can start relating with that information. Now, as we discuss the topic, when we say, does God really exist? So we did some logical and some scientific proof to prove the existence of God. Right? We discussed some points, how to prove the existence of God. So same way, somebody may say, okay, I want to know the proof of the existence of soul. So what is the proof that there is something called soul? We see this body in front of us, right? But has anybody seen the soul? Can somebody see the soul? Or can somebody show the soul? So how do I believe in soul? That we are not this body, but we are the soul. So we will cover same way as we prove the existence of God. We will go through the points to prove the existence of soul. How do we understand? How do we perceive the existence of soul? So the first point for the proof of existence of soul is by common sense. We can move the fan a little in the front. I guess it's got heat up. So from the common sense point of view, how we understand the existence of soul. Common sense can teach us many things, but the problem is common sense is also very uncommon. So, for example, from a just common sense, plain common sense point of view, when somebody dies, what do we say? So when somebody dies, generally what are the notions, what are the phrases we use? He's no more. He has passed away. He has left his body. Mr. So-and-so is gone. Right? So if we carefully observe these phrases, what does it tell? Mr. Such-and-such passed away. He has left his body. So we use those phrases in kind of our common day-to-day life. So if somebody, the body is still lying there, if we are the body and the body is still lying there, and when we say he has passed away, so who has passed away? Body is still lying there. When we say Mr. So-and-so left his body, So he left his body, right? So body is there, it means there is something else which is gone out of the body now. So that is first common sense thing. So it means there is something in the body which is now gone. Another common sense thing. We say, let's say the ears, we use the ears to hear. We use the eyes to see. We use the tongue to taste or eat. So who is really eating? Is this the mouth which is eating? Is this the ears which are hearing? Is that the eyes which are watching? Who is really doing these things? Because if the eyes are watching, ears are hearing, tongue is tasting, then the dead body also has all these things still. Dead body has the eyes. Actually, when somebody dies, the eyes become a little bigger, right? So in that sense, you should see more if the eyes are watching. So if eyes are watching, ears are hearing, mouth is, the tongue is tasting, then the dead body still has all those facilities, all those things. So he should be able to do that. But it's not, the dead body cannot do all those things anymore. So who is really doing those things? It is something in the body which is utilizing these senses to do that task. Srila Prabhupada, he gave a very common example. Once in a Gurukul, he asked the kids, it's gone in overall world, now there are many Gurukuls as a school. So, in one of the Gurukuls in his early days, right, when he was there, so he asked one of the child, when you raise your hand, what do you say? Who is this? Who's? What is this? Just raise your hand. What do you say? My hand. When you raise to this, what is this? My shirt or my cloth. So, what is this? My face. And when overall go to this, what is this?
My body.
My body. Do you say I shirt, I face, I hand, I body? It says my, right? My body. So it means this body belongs to me. I am not this body. I am something with different from this body. This body belongs to me. I am something who is occupying this body. The same way, all of you came in car here. So if I ask you, okay, whose car is this? Whose car is this Hummer on the driveway? Not Hummer, the HHR. What is that? So if I say, whose car is this? Somebody will raise hand. Okay, it's my car. You don't say I car, right? I car is a different term now. So you don't say it's I car, it's my car, it belongs to me. So same way this hand belongs to me, this body belongs to me. I am something different from this body. Yet another common sense point is we feel some pain and pleasure, right? If I slap somebody, he will have the feeling of some pain. Or generally people, for happiness, they have a feeling of pleasure. Now, this feeling of pain and pleasure is the symptom of the presence of consciousness. If the consciousness is present, then somebody will feel this pain and pleasure. But if there is no consciousness, there is no feeling. So for example, you all are sitting on this floor. So if you keep sitting on this floor for 2 hours, is this floor going to say, oh, I'm too tired, please get up now? If you kick the football, is the football going to say, oh, I'm hurt? Because there is no consciousness in that. But if you hit a person, that person will cry. Oh, it was too hard. Another thing, if a child come and sit in your lap, after half an hour, 1 hour, you will say, oh, I'm too tired, beta, get up and sit on the side. So the floor doesn't feel pain, even though you keep sitting here for a full day, but you will start feeling pain if a child comes and sit in your lap. What is the difference? The presence of consciousness. The floor does not have consciousness, the football does not have consciousness, but a living entity has a consciousness. Because of the presence of consciousness, there is feeling of pain and pleasure. Now, the presence of consciousness is symptom of soul. The presence of consciousness is the symptom of presence of soul. Now the dead body, again, does not feel any pain and pleasure. You pinch the dead body, you hit the dead body doesn't cry, oh, I am hurt, because there is no consciousness. Why there is no consciousness? Because the soul has left the body. And the presence of consciousness, so the presence of consciousness is because of presence of soul, and the soul is situated, the scriptures define, even Bhagavad Gita define, the soul is situated in the core of the heart. It's in the core of the heart, it's in the vicinity of the heart, not exactly inside the heart, it's in the vicinity of the heart. And through the presence of soul, the energy of the soul is spread throughout the body, which is consciousness. And that consciousness spread throughout the body through the medium of blood. So wherever the blood flows in your body, you have the presence of consciousness. Wherever there is no blood, you don't have the sensation. For example, if your nails grow, you cut your nails, do you feel pain? But if you rip the nail out from the skin, then you will feel pain, right? Because the skin has blood flowing to it. Same way when you cut your hair, when you go to a barber, do a haircut, your hair doesn't cry, oh, don't cut me. But if somebody pull your hair from the skin, then you will feel pain, because the skin has a circulation of blood. So, because of the presence of soul, there is a consciousness spread throughout the body, through the flow of blood. So this is a common sense understanding to understand the presence of soul. Now, but is there any other scientific proof? Because I said common sense is also not common. So we have to look for some other scientific proofs also. So what are the other scientific proof? So another proof is out of body experience. So there are a lot of OBEs and NDEs, near-death experience. Okay, this is very common terminologies now, out-of-body experience or near-death experience. What does it mean? For example, if somebody is hurt and somebody is going through a surgery, doctors are operating on it, person is completely under the influence of anesthesia. Now the soul comes out of the body, and the soul, staying in the ether, is watching everything. So there are so many instances, so many recorded incidents of this, where, say for example, one scenario, doctors were doing a surgery on a person. So during that surgery, the person is completely under anesthesia, but the soul comes out, and so soul is watching from above, whatever is happening there. So the soul is watching that, oh, these are the two people, doctors, they are cutting the body, doing something like this. And at the later on, when everything is done, soul again gets into the body, and that person narrates to the doctor everything, whatever was happening that time. And the doctors were surprised. How can that person tell? For example, the person started telling, oh, when you guys were operating on me, you guys were talking like this, talking these things. You were talking about the golf you played last day. And there was a lot of car honking sound going outside. There was kids playing football outside. So all those sounds were coming. So he told all those things. And the doctor was surprised how he can tell. Because medically, the person's heart rate is flat, right, during the whole anesthesia and when the surgery is going on. But certainly, that soul can witness everything, and he reported everything back. So that is out-of-body experience, and there's so many instances of that. Another example is past life memories. So what does past life memories mean? So person after death, so he got another birth, another life, and so there's a famous doctor, Dr. Stevenson Carlins. He did many of the studies. So there are almost 2,000 studies. He has his whole book of different studies. And all these studies are kind of a research studies. It's not that somebody claim, oh, in my last previous life, I was such and such, I lived there. So not just like randomly somebody telling, but all proven stories that they research, that is that person really telling the truth or not. So there was one instance, there's a small child, okay, merely 5-6 year old child, and he started talking about his previous life. In my previous life, I used to live in this village. My name was this. In that village, I had my family, my wife is there, my kids are there. And the parents will not listen. Oh, this kid is just kind of making up something. So later on, when they kind of once they decided to take the child to that particular town and see if the child will recognize, without telling the child, they took the child in a train without telling that we are going there. So as soon as that particular train, that particular town came, the child recognized that station. The child got down. Oh, this is my town. I used to live here. He started walking towards his house. On the way, there was one shop. So he went into the shop. He told me, you know, can you look into your account books? There was such and such person. And do you see that name in your account book? So yeah, that name is there. That person is there. So he said, this person owed you that much money. So that was true. He owed some money to that particular person, that shop. And then he went, walked further to his house. So he indicated, oh, that was my house. Went inside the house. Said, oh, this is my wife. And there are a 60-year-old lady. So this 5-year-old boy is claiming, oh, that's my wife. There are 30, 40 years old people living there. He started claiming, these are my kids. There are another 5, 6 his age group kids. That they are my grandkids. So these are the instances of past life memory. Person, whatever he was in his previous life, he was able to remember in his next life. And a lot of other instances happen when somebody, he has not learned anything in this lifetime, but he started talking in a completely different language, which he has never come across in this lifetime. Somebody started speaking in Sanskrit or in completely some different language, which is unknown to him in this lifetime. So like that, there are many past life instances, past life memories. So these are the proof of existence of soul, that we are not this body, we are something different from this body, and right now we are occupying this body. So if the question comes, okay, I am not this body, I am the spirit soul, then what is this body about? What is this body? What is this body made up of? What is the function of this body? So Krishna defined, what we see, this body is made up of 8 material elements. There are 5 gross elements and 3 subtle elements. So gross element, everybody know the gross elements, right? Even the children know what are the 5 basic elements. You know what are the 5 basic elements? What are those? So, earth, water, fire, air, ether. Right? So, these are the 5, panchabhuta, the 5 basic material elements. Earth, water, fire, air, ether. So, the body, this gross body which we can see, is made up of these 5 gross elements. And then on top of that, there are 3 subtle elements. Mana, buddhi, ahankar, mind, intelligence and false ego. Now, in Sanskrit term, this is called Sthula Shreer and Suksham Shreer. The gross body is called Sthula Shreer. And the subtle body is called Suksham Shreer. So what is this gross body and subtle body? We said earth, water, fire, air, ether. So our body is made up of these 5 elements. So our body has these 5 elements. Let's say earth. When everybody dies, this body either is burned or put into the earth. Ultimately, it becomes one with earth, right? If it either it becomes ashes, if you burn it, which is earth. So our body has the part of earth. And then water. Does our body has water? 70% of human body is water. So the blood flowing within this body is because of the presence of some liquid in the body, right? Some water element. And when we perspire, there is a water coming out of your pores, body pores. So that is a water element in the body. Air. Does our body has air? So what you breathe in and breathe out, that's the air, right? 5 type of air going inward, outward. And when you yawn, that also is because of the air in your body. When there is more of the bad air, which leads to the yawning. Now fire, does our body has fire? Can you believe our body has fire in it? Do you know? Do you know our body has fire? Why are you burning then? So, yes, our body has fire. That's how our body temperature is maintained. Right? We have a certain body temperature. If the fire is dim, then your body temperature drops. And if the fire is more, then your body temperature raises. So that's a thermostat. It's kind of a thermostat within your body. There is a thermostat, but that thermostat is monitoring the heat of the fire in your body. And in the stomach, there is another fire, which is known as Jatragni, the fire of digestion. Right? So our body has a fire of digestion. So if sometime we say, sometimes we say the fire of digestion has lowered, Mandagani. The digestion fire has gone down. So there is a fire element. Now ether. Does our body has ether? Yes, because otherwise we will not be able to speak. The sound waves will travel because of the presence of ether. So our body is made up of these five gross elements. And then there are three subtle elements. What are those three subtle elements? Mind, intelligence, and false ego. So Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, Bhumi rapo nalo vayu kham manor buddhi rayavacha ahankar ityam me bhinna prakriti ashtada. These eight elements are my separated energies. So this body is made up of these material elements, Bhumi, Apo, Nala, Vayu, Kama. So these are five gross. And then Mano, Buddhi, Ahankar. So let's talk about the subtle body, mind. So in the, according to the scientific knowledge, we say mind and intelligence two different things. What does the medical science or explain, how the medical science explain about the mind or intelligence? The closest thing they explain is the brain. Right? Under this skull here, there is a brain. And this brain has a white matter and a grey matter. And the amount of your grey matter determines how much intelligence you have. That's how the medical science can explain. But now there are two different things, man and buddhi. So this man, in English we translate as mind, and the buddhi as intelligence. So there are two separate things. The function of the mind. What is the function of mind? Anybody can explain? What does the mind do in general? So function of mind is thinking, willing, feeling. So this, so mind does all these functions, thinking, willing and feeling. So always there are hundreds and hundreds of thought going on in the mind. Mind never take rest. You may be sleeping, but mind is active. So all these thoughts are going on. Mind's constant job is bringing thoughts, past, future. Doesn't want to stay in the present, by the way. Either it's going in the past or in the future. It's always like a roller coaster. So all these thoughts are going on. And mind is very strong. And Arjuna confirmed this in Bhagavad Gita. Arjuna says, this mind, it's very hard to control the mind. He said, I can control the wind, but it's impossible to control the mind. Or hard to control the mind. Right? For him, it was easy to control the wind. What about us? We don't have that kind of capacity. So mind is very restless. He said, chanchalam hi manah Krishna. This mind is chanchala, restless. And it's very forceful. Anybody has experience with the mind? How turbulent the mind is? You maybe try to focus on one task. and your mind is always running here and there. Right? Mind keep proposing. You are doing one task, mind is proposing 100 tasks. Oh, what about this task? You need to finish that. You need to finish that. Mind is restless. How to control the mind? Then how to control the mind? So, mind word comes from mana, right? So, the Sanskrit word is mana. And then there is another term which everybody of us, all of us will be familiar with. There is another term called mantra. So, what is the meaning of mantra? Mana trayate iti mantra. Which can deliver the mind, which can control the mind, which can pacify the mind. That is mantra. So, the process of controlling the mind is to chant the mantra, chant the holy name. So that's why we chant, right? We chant the mantra. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. So that is the method which is described in the scriptures to control the mind, to pacify the mind. Once there was a big businessman. He had a business all over the world. Big offices, and it was very uncontrolled basically to take care of his business. So he was always desiring, I wish I had some mystic powers like the genie, right? There's a Aladdin Kachirag, you rub that lamp and a jinn will come. So he thought, I wish I had a lamp like that, rubber lamp, and genie will come and do all my work. So actually one day a jinn appeared in front of him. He says, I'm your servant, I will do whatever you will say. So this businessman, he really became happy. Yeah, I was always desiring for this genie. Now finally I got a genie. So the jinn said, I will do whatever you say, but I have one condition. You have to always keep me engaged. You have to always keep me busy. If you're not able to keep me engaged, I will kill you. So the businessman said, okay, that's easy. I have too much work. You will never be able to stay quiet. So he said, okay, go to California. I have 20 years of work pending in that office. So Ginny went, he finished the 20 years work in 2 months and came back. Okay, what is next? He said, okay, go to New York. I have another business office there and 10 years of work pending there. So he went there. Finished that work in 1 month and came back. Okay, go to Bombay. I have another 10 years of work pending there. He went there, finished that work in 1 month and again came back. Now this businessman started worrying. Okay, this guy, he has finished all the work. Now how do I keep him engaged? So he sent him for another work and then he started thinking, what should I do next? If I don't keep him engaged, he will kill me. So finally he thought he had a guru. Okay, I have to go to my guru and take some advice. Generally, people keep guru only for a emergency, right? If there is an emergency, then we'll go to guru and take some advice. Otherwise, okay, you stay in your ashram, I'm happy at my home. So he went to his guru, finally. He told his dilemma, okay, this person, this genie is making my life crazy. So his guru said, see, I told you in the beginning, don't be greedy. If you are greedy, that's what happens, right? Then greed leads to hell. So when we have greed, then our life becomes miserable actually. So now, okay, you are in problem, we have to solve your problem. So he whispered something in his ear, gave him some solution. Do this thing and you will be able to solve your problem. So that person, he came back. Next time Ginny came back, he said, what is next? So, okay. Let's go. So he asked Ginny to sit down in his car, BMW, Ford, Mercedes, whatever it is, or Chrysler. So he had the Ginny sit in his car and they drove. This businessman, he had a big farmhouse. So they went to the farmhouse, he asked the Ginny, dig a big hole here. So Ginny, in 1 minute, he dig a big hole. He said, okay, now put a bamboo in the middle of this hole. So Ginny put a bamboo. Right, the pole. So the businessman said, okay, now keep going up and down, up and down, up and down until I stop you, until I ask you to stop. So the poor genie, so he's going up and down, up and down, up and down, and so he is engaged, and this businessman is finally relaxed. No more trouble. So what does this story represent actually? It's nothing but we and our mind. Okay, this businessman is we, and this genie represent our mind. Mind is always keeping you up and down, here and there, this thought, that thought. So how we can track, how we can pacify that genie, the genie of the mind? Take the chanting beads, keep going round and round and round on that beads, chanting the holy name, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. So you keep going up and down on that beads, and the mind is slowly, 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 the mind becomes pacified. That's how the method described in the scripture to pacify the mind. So in general, otherwise, the mind is restless. It drives people crazy. That's why it's it. Right? What is that common proverb? Empty mind is the devil's house. Khali man shaitan ka ghar. Right? So now, above the mind, so Krishna described, above the five senses is the mind. Above the mind is the intelligence. Intelligence, buddhi. What is the function of intelligence? So job of the intelligence is to discriminate. Differentiate the right and wrong. So the intelligence, equipped with knowledge, can differentiate what is right and what is wrong. And who does the decision making? Whoever is the strong out of the mind and intelligence, that will decide. So, because if it was the intelligence, all your decisions should be right decisions, right? But do you make wrong decisions sometimes? So who is enforcing those wrong choices? Because intelligence can differentiate the right from wrong. So it's the mind which forces us to act in a wrong way sometime when the mind is more powerful. In general, the intelligence is supposed to control the mind. But in a perverted situation, our mind takes charge of the intelligence. And he sends the intelligence to work for him. So, now how do we get the intelligence? So with the intelligence, we are supposed to control the mind. How we make the intelligence sharp? With the knowledge. Right? And that specifically with the spiritual knowledge. More the knowledge we have, or the intelligence, our sharper the intelligence, we can make better decisions. Or we can better control the mind. Now, the scripture compare this whole body-mind-soul scenario with the chariot analogy. So in a chariot, so it says the body is the chariot. So it's from the Katha Upanishad. So the body is like the chariot. So in the chariot, there are horses, right? So the five senses, the ear, eye, touch, taste, tongue. So these five senses are like the five horses in the chariot. Now in the chariot, the horse is controlled by what? By the rein, lagam. So mind is the rein in this chariot. Mind is supposed to control those senses. Now who holds that rein? So in a chariot, somebody will hold that rein. Right, driver will hold that rein. So who is the driver of this chariot, of this body? That's intelligence. So intelligence is the driver. And the soul is the passenger on this chariot. So now if these horses on the chariot are let loose, what will happen? If nobody is holding the reins of the horses, what will happen? The horses are free to move anywhere, right? Horses can run anywhere and they can let the chariot fall into the ditch. So same thing, if the senses are not controlled by the mind, and the mind is not controlled by the intelligence, the senses can run astray. Senses can lead us to all the different sense objects, and the person may end up into the hell. Because running behind all these different sense objects, that's what lead person to do all the sinful activities, which ultimately lead the person to the suffering, to the hellish condition of life. So this is another picture showing the five horses as the five senses as the horses of the chariot. Mind is the rein. Intelligence is the charioteer or the driver of that. The body or the soul is the passenger on the chariot. This whole chariot is the body. And there is a super soul also sitting in that chariot who is the witness. So super soul, Krishna, is also sitting in the body, Paramatma. So in every living entity, the super soul is also accompanying the soul as a witness. Right? Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, Sarvasya Chaham Hridya Shanivishto, I am seated in everybody's heart as Paramatma. And what is he doing? He is witnessing the activities of every living entity. He is there to guide. He is there to guide the intelligence. If somebody chooses to turn towards Krishna. But if we are turning away from Krishna and trying to do with our own intelligence or with our own conditioning, then what happens? Then we are not able to control the mind. And mind is not able to control the senses, and senses run in every direction. So, how do we get the buddhi or the intelligence? How we can make the intelligence sharp? Sometimes people ask this question, right? How do we get intelligence? How to become more intelligence, or how to get the remembrance? Even though you will not know all this, but a lot of time we don't remember these things. So how we make our intelligence sharp or memory sharp? So if I ask somebody, some dadi ma, they will tell, badam khao. Doodh ke saath badam khao. Buddhi badegi, intelligence badegi. So that is one material way of increasing your intelligence. I don't know how much it helps, but old people used to say that. Badam khane se intelligence badega. But what does Krishna say? Actually, the intelligence is also based on somebody's previous life, right? How much intelligence somebody will get, what kind of facilities one will get, it's determined by our past karma. So, how do we get that real intelligence? So Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, Tesham satata yukta nam bhajatam priti purvakam dadhami buddhi yogam tam yena mam upayanti te. So Krishna says, I give the intelligence. Dadhami buddhi yogam tam. I give them the intelligence. Whom? To whom? Tesham satata yukta nam bhajatam priti purvakam. Those who are always connected with me, always worship me. Bhajatam priti purvakam, with love. Who are always worshipping me in love. I give them the intelligence. So the intelligence actually comes from Krishna when we are connected with Krishna. So here Krishna is saying, satta yuktanam, always connected with me, not like once in a while, once in a year or once in a month, I will think about Krishna, and then rest of the time, you are there, I am here. It's not like that, always connected with Krishna. So generally what happens, people will say, oh, I go to temple on Janmashtami, but apart from that, I don't have time. So Krishna says always, and that's also bhajatam priti purvakam, with love, not by force, right? Somebody may come to the satsang program maybe by force, out of some out of obligation or something. Somebody think, oh, he is calling me so many times, maybe I should go. So somebody may come out of obligation. Somebody can come to the temple, maybe because, so children sometimes may come because parents are pushing. No, you have to come, you have to come, you have to come. So Krishna is saying, not like by force, it has to be by love, with love. If somebody is connected with me always, worshipping me in love, I give the intelligence. So this is, and then apart from, above the intelligence, there is mana, buddhi, ahankar. This is ahankar. What is ahankar? Ahankar is not like sometimes we call it, or this people has a lot of ego. He is too proud. We think, oh, he is something very high-five person, he is too proud. So, the real ahankar, what we are talking about here, ahankar, is identity. Ahankar. So that is the identity of the person. Everybody has identity. Even in the spiritual sense, everybody has an identity. So that there is a real ego. So the ego means identity, our identity. So there is a real ego and a false ego. So real ego is knowing our real identity, our original Swarup. But there is a false ego, which is the problem. So false ego means knowing, identifying ourselves with wrong, having a wrong identification. We are not this body, but identifying ourselves to be with this body. That, oh, I am such and such person. I am with such and such background. I am this executive position or something. So identifying ourselves with those things, that is false ego, false identification. Real identification is knowing our real identity. That is, I am not this body, I am the spirit soul. So the scripture says our real identity is to know we are the spirit soul and we are part and parcel of Krishna. Jivera Savrup Hoye Krishnera Nityadas. Our original position is we are part and parcel of Krishna. We are to be in service of Krishna. That is the real position. But we forget that position and we identify ourselves with this body. Oh, I'm an Indian, I'm an American, I'm a black, I'm a white. So when we identify with those kind of things, that is false ego. That is the ahankar, the wrong identification. So this body, mind and soul, that is to identify what is this. So there is a body and a soul. Body is like a vehicle for the soul, right? We said the chariot. So the soul is sitting in this chariot of the body, trying to cover his journey, whatever journey one has to cover within this lifetime, and then move to the next destination. So after this body, what happens to the soul? So I said, okay, I am not this body, I am the soul. This body is something different. So what happens to the soul when this body dies? So if we are not the body, body has a death. What happens to soul at that time? So what are the characteristics of the soul? Let's briefly discuss what are the characteristics of the soul. So Krishna defines as the first characteristics of the soul. Chapter 2, text 13. Dehino asmin yatha dehe komaram yovanam jara tatha dehantara praptir dhiras tatrana muhyate. So as a soul passes within this body, dehino asmin yatha dehe, within this body, as the dehino, which is the soul. So as the soul passes within this body, from boyhood to youth to old age, komaram yovanam jara. Similarly, tatha deha anta. Deha anta is when the end of this body. Deha means body. Anta means end. When this body is over, at the end of this body, similarly the soul passes into another body. And a sober person is not bewildered by such a change. So, the real knowledge to understand, I am not this body, I am the soul. And at the end of this body, I will attain a different vehicle. This body is just like a vehicle for me to do my activities, do my duties. And if, when this body dies, when this body is over, this soul will move on to a next body. A sober person is not bewildered. Now, what is a sober person? What does it mean by a sober person? Dhiras. Here the word used is Dhira. Who is a Dhira? So in English, the word translated is sober. So generally sober word is used in terms of a drunk versus non-drunk person also. Right? Sometimes if somebody is not drunk, that person is considered as a sober person. Or if somebody after drinking one or two glasses or whatever pegs is able to maintain his stability, he's considered he's sober. After having two pegs, he's still sober. That's what people will generally say. So what here sober means? Generally we are under the... So this misidentification is also as an intoxication. Knowing ourselves, identifying ourselves with this body is also like an intoxication. So we are intoxicated with this wrong conception that I am this body. So sober person means who is free from this intoxication of wrong identity. So a sober person is not bewildered. Now, does this body changes? We have seen, right, from boyhood to youth to old age, the body is continuously changing. Sometimes we say, okay, if you meet a child after many, many years, what do you generally say? Oh, I saw you 5 years back, you were like this, now you are like this, right? So, you were like this, but now you are like this. So that you is same, but the person, the body, external appearance has changed. He was like this and now he is like that. But the you, who is occupying that body, remains the same. So medical science also says this body is continuously changing. Right? The cells within this body are always changing. And after 7 years, this body is completely different. So within this 7 year period, all the cells within this body has renewed. So this body is always changing. So here Krishna is saying, as the body is changing, but the soul within this body is passing through the old age, at the end it will pass into a new body. And a sober person is not bewildered. And next Krishna defines, na jayate mriyate va kadachin nayam bhutva bhavita na bhuyah ajo nitya shashvato yam purano na hanyate hanyamane sharire. Very important. Na hanyate hanyamane sharire. When the body is dead, soul is not dead. When the body is killed, that's not the death for the soul. Na jayate mriyate va kadachin. The soul never takes birth and soul never dies. Soul has never taken birth and soul never dies. Soul is eternal. Nayam bhutva bhavita vana bhuya ajo nitya. It's eternal. Shashvato yam purano. And it's the oldest. So soul is eternal. It has never taken birth and it's never going to die. When the body dies, soul does not finish. So what happened to the soul? Krishna defined in the next verse, Vasamsi jirnani yatha vihaya navani grahanati naroparani tatha shrirani vihaya jirnani anyani sanyati navani dehi. It's a very nice analogy Krishna is giving to explain what happened to the soul at death. So the analogy given is, as you give up the old garments and put on the new garments, the same way the soul gives up the old and useless body and accepts a new body. So vasamsi jirnani yatha vihaya. When the clothes are old and torn out, you give up those clothes and put on new clothes. So similarly, tatha shrirani vihaya jirnani. When the body becomes useless, this body is given up and the new body is given. Now, how does that happen? Who determine what body I will get? Right? Is it my choice? I will say, okay, can you give me that particular body? It doesn't happen like that. But so what determines what kind of body, what kind of species form one will get? So how many total life forms are there? So the scriptures define there are 8.4 million species of life. 84 lakh yoniya. So 8.4 million species of life as aquatic, animal, bird, beast, human. So the overall human species is 0.4 million. 4 lakh are the different varieties of human forms, like the Chanara, Gandharva, Devatas and all that put together. There is 4 lakh human forms of life, like a human-like forms. So we will get one of these 8.4 million species, but who determines how will somebody get a particular life form? Is it based on somebody's desire? So how does it work? Somebody said karma. So yes, it's both factors play a role. There is a desire and deserve. So I always give this 2D fundamental. So what is 2D? Desire and deserve. It's our desire, and based on that desire plus what you deserve. It doesn't happen only based on desire, because if I say, okay, I want to be born in the family of Tata Birla, Ambanis, it's not going to happen like that, right? So what is going to determine? It's what we deserve. So again, with this same analogy of garments, how we give up the old cloth and put on the new one. So if somebody go to market to buy cloth or buy some garment, let's talk about, want to talk about the men example or woman example? Woman example will be very easy to explain. So let's say Mataji go to buy cloth or a particular type of, so she may have a desire that I want to buy a particular type of garment, particular type of cloth. Let's say sari. Right, so you go to buy a sari, your desire is to buy a sari, but what particular type of sari? Or so there are different varieties of sari, maybe a silk sari, a cotton sari, a Kanjivaram sari, or Banarasi sari, or whatever it is. So there are so many varieties of saris. Now the cost of the sari may also range from 200 rupees to 20 lakh rupees, right? So there's all those different ranges, different varieties available. But what kind of sari one will be able to get based on how much you have in your wallet. So what type of sari you want to buy, that is desire, and what particular you will get is something is restricted based on the amount you have in your wallet, isn't it? So you may desire to get a 20 lakh rupee sari, but if your wallet has only 500 rupees, that's what you will get. So same thing, X based on how somebody shifts from one life to another life. What kind of body one will get? Based on what kind of bank balance we have. And what is that bank balance? Bank balance of karma. So based on that bank balance, it will determine what life form, what kind of life condition one will achieve in his next life. So now this whole principle of karma, reincarnation and all that, we will discuss in much more detail in a different session also. So moving forward into the description of soul, next point is, okay, so why soul cannot be killed? Krishna says soul is na hanyate hanyamane sharire. When body is dead, soul is not dead. But why? Why soul is not able to die? So Arjuna may be having a doubt in the mind, right? Because when this Bhagavad Gita is spoken just before the war, so when Krishna is talking this knowledge, Arjuna may be thinking in the background, oh, Krishna is telling this soul cannot be killed. Soul, we are different from the body. Soul, there is something else in the body. There is a soul which is sitting in the core of the heart. But why soul cannot be killed? Okay, I understand soul is different from the body, but I'm going to shoot a lot of arrows. So I'm just giving Arjuna's perspective here. So Arjuna is thinking, okay, I'm going to shoot many arrows, many sharp, thousands and thousands of arrows. What if some arrow pierces the body and pierces the soul through the body? I'm going to shoot the fire weapon, fire arrows. What if the soul get burned? I'm going to shoot the wind arrows, the tornado arrows. What if the soul is withered because of that? I'm going to shoot the rain, what a tornado, right? Or what do you call that? Heavy rains. What if the soul is moistened? So that's how, reading Krishna Arjuna's mind, Krishna says, Nanam chindanti shastrani nanam dahati pavaka. Na chayanam kalidyanti apo na shoshyati marutah. So what is that? Nanam chindanti shastrani. The soul cannot be cut into pieces by any weapon. Nanam dahati pavaka. Soul cannot be burnt by the fire. Na chayanam kalidyanti apo. The soul cannot be moistened by the water. Na shoshyati maruta. And it cannot be withered by the wind. It cannot be dried up by the wind. Now, is there anything else in this world which can sustain these kind of things? You can see a big structures, the most solid structure in the world. They get destroyed with time. Right? Some earthquake, some tsunami, this, that. There's nothing in the world which can stay forever. The big buildings, a big tornado comes, the buildings, big structures got withered. So much property get drowned. So Krishna says the soul cannot be killed because it cannot be burnt by the fire, it cannot be cut into pieces by any weapon, it cannot be moistened by water, it cannot be withered by the wind. But now if somebody says, still somebody is very obstinate, persistent about, no, I want to see the soul. Seeing is believing. Right? I want to see, then I will believe. Otherwise, how can I believe? So what does Krishna say? What is another characteristic of the soul? Krishna says, avyaktoyam achintyoyam avikaryoyam uchyate. The soul, the characteristic of the soul is, it's avyakto, it's invisible. Avyaktoyam achintyoyam. Achintyo means it's unconceivable. Nobody can conceive the soul. Nobody can see the soul with this material senses. It's invisible to these material senses. So that's why nobody can see the soul. But now, another description is the size of the soul. Krishna gave the size of the soul. It's not directly given in Bhagavad Gita, but it's described in one of the Upanishads, which describe the size of the soul. So what is the size of the soul? It says, Bala Grasha Shatabhagasya Shatada Kalpitasya cha. So if you take the tip of the hair, Bala Agra, take the front of the hair. Not like if the hair is this long, I cut the hair like this, that's the front. Not like that, the tip, that is referred as front. Bala Agra. So take the tip of the hair, Shatabhagasya, and divide the tip of the hair into 100 pieces. And then take that one piece and Shatada Kalpatasya cha, further divide that one part into 100. So divide the tip of the hair into 100, then take one tip and divide further it into 100. That is the size of the soul. So nobody can perceive that size of the soul. So we cannot measure that size of the soul, or even through our most powerful instruments, we cannot measure that size. So soul cannot be perceived by any material instrument. So now, having said all that about the body and the soul, so the next question comes, okay, we do so many things to satisfy this body, right? There is a food for the body, to keep the body fit. What is the food for the soul? How to make the living entity the self really happy. Once there was a lady, she bought a parrot and she put the parrot in a cage. First she put the parrot in a iron cage and the bird is always doing some sound. She is thinking, a bird is not happy here. Let me put him in a nice, more expensive cage. She took the bird out of the iron cage, put it in a silver cage. The bird is still making sound. She thinks, oh, it's not happy. Let me put it in a golden cage. She put the bird in a golden cage. Still it's making sound. She put it in a diamond cage. Still the bird is making sound. And she is thinking, oh, bird is still not happy. So she is trying to upgrade that cage, trying to polish the cage, thinking the bird will become more happy. But ultimately the bird died. Why? Because she is always taking care of the cage, but forgot to feed the bird. Right? So we are in the same situation. We are always taking care of this body, which is nothing but the outer covering for the soul. The soul is residing inside. So we are taking care of this body nicely, decorating this body, putting nice clothes, feeding the body nicely. But we forget to take care of the soul. What is the real need for the soul? How to make the self really happy? So there was the same question asked by the sages of Nemesharanya. So there was the sages of Nemesharanya. 5,000 years back, 88,000 sages assembled at Nemesharanya to do a 1,000-year log yagya. So during that, Suta Goswami arrived at that place and all the sages assembled around Suta Goswami and asked him various questions. So they asked mainly six questions to Suta Goswami. And one of the questions was, what is that thing which make the self, make the living entity really happy? So in answer to the questions of the sages, Suta Goswami replied, Savai Pumso Paro Dharma Yator Bhakti Adhokshaje Ahetuki Apratihata Yayatma Suprasidati. So what is that which will make the living entity really happy? Is Savai Pumso Paro Dharma. One takes to its eternal religion, Paro Dharma, the Para Dharma, the real duty. What is that? Yator Bhakti Adhokshaje. And that is the devotional service to the Adhokshaja, the Supreme Lord, who is beyond his senses. And what kind of bhakti that should be? What kind of devotional service that should be? Ahetuki. So there are two characteristics defined. Ahetuki and apratihata. Ahetuki means which is without any motive, without any ulterior motives. And apratihata means which is unbreakable, unstoppable. It means it's not one day, two day. It's 365 days a year. It's apratihata, unbreakable. When the living entity engages into the service of the Supreme Lord, which is without any motive and without break, unstoppable, then the living entity attain the real peace. Yayatma suprasidati. So as I defined earlier, right, that previous shloka which I mentioned, the dhami buddhi yogam tam. So if somebody engages in the devotion service continuously, priti purvakam, with love, that is the real essence. Engaging in the service which is unbreakable, unstoppable, and which is without any ulterior motive, then the living entity can really become peaceful. It can really attain the real happiness. We were discussing how to attain real happiness, right? The first session. So now we are coming to that point, just touching on that. Not discussing in detail, just touching on that subject matter. To gain the real happiness is to engage in the service of the Supreme Lord. That is the food for the soul. We have the food for the body and food for the soul. Food for the body is what? We had the food for the body in the beginning. You eat chapati, dal, roti, sabji, milkshake and whatever it is. So that's the food for the body, to nourish the body. But to nourish the living entity, the soul which is occupying this body, how to make that living entity really happy, what is the food for the soul? So everything has its own food, right? Food for the car is different than the food for the body. You cannot open the fuel tank cover and put gulab jamuns in that. The food for the car is, you have to put the petrol or diesel. Food for the body is same thing for the body. You cannot just open your mouth and put the petrol, that pipe inside. So that is not for food for the body. Food for the body is, we have to eat, feed nicely, it's nice prasadam. The same way there is food for the soul. Food for the soul is to engage in the devotional service. To make the living entity really happy and peaceful is to engage in the service of the Supreme Lord. Now you want to hear a story? Bedtime story? This is my favorite. Some of you may have heard that previously. So the story of a king and his four queens. Sounds familiar? So, once there was a king, okay, and he has four queens. So, the king spent most of his time with his, like, the fourth queen, or let me tell it differently. Once the king came to know that I'm going to die soon. So, the king came to his first wife, or the fourth wife, in whatever order you want to take it. So he came to his first wife, to whom he loved the most, with whom he spent the most time, for whom he cared the most. So he came to that first wife and told her that I'm going to die very soon. And I took care of you very nicely. I spent a lot of time with you. So now, will you come with me? When I die, will you come with me? So the first wife, the first queen, she said, sorry, I cannot come with you. I know you will be gone, but life has to continue. So she plainly refused. So the king was very sad. He says, what is this? I spent so much time with her. I took care of her so nicely, fulfilled all her desires. And now she is not willing to come with me. So he, in a dejection mood, he went to the second wife. Second wife was the one next. For her also, he took nice care, fulfilled all her needs and desire. So he told the same thing to the second wife. I'm going to die very soon. Will you come with me? She said, no, I know you took care of me nicely. When you are gone, I will be sad for a few days. But ultimately, life has to go on. When you are gone, I will be on my way. So the king, after hearing this, king again became very dejected, depressed. So he went to the third wife. The third wife was another whom he cared, but not as much as maybe first and second one, but he took care of her, fulfilled the needs. So told the same thing, I'm going to die very soon, will you come with me? She said, I know you took care of me nicely, you fulfilled all my desires, spend time. When you are gone, I will be very sad. I will cry. Maybe for a few months I will be sad, upset, I will not be able to handle myself, but after that life has to continue. So I will learn to live without you. Maybe I will find somebody else. So the king became completely depressed now. He did not even have the courage to go to the fourth wife, because he never took care of fourth wife. He was always neglecting the fourth wife. And the fourth wife was the one who always took care of the king. Always cooking for him, feeding him nicely, taking care of his needs. Who cared for the king the most. And king always neglected her. So in this story, So he did not have the courage to go to the fourth one. So he just started walking away. And then from the back, he heard the voice. Yes, I will come with you. And when he turned back, he said, it's the fourth wife, whom he never cared for, and she is willing to come. She is saying, I will come with you. Now in this story, this king and the four wives, this is our story. I try to bring ourselves in the picture always. So this is again our story. This king is nothing, we are the king. And who are these four wives? Of course we don't have four wives. Don't even try to get. So what are these four wives represent in this story? Well, let's look at the first one. The first one, king cared for the most. This first wife represent the things which belong to us. The property, bank balance, the cars and everything. So we care for all these things too much. We spend so much time taking care of all these things. Is that true or wrong? So we spend so much time taking care of our property, bank balance and all these things. But what happens when somebody dies? What happened? These things don't even come to the cremation ground. What to speak of crying and feeling any pain for us, right? These things don't even come. As soon as somebody dies, somebody else will claim these things. So the second wife represents the social circle. Maybe the neighbors, the society, this, that. We care so much about the society, about the neighbors, about the friends. Oh, what will they think? What will they think about me if I do this thing? What will that person think about me if I did that? What will my neighbor say if I started going to the Hare Krishnas? He will say, oh, you have gone crazy. Right? So, we think so much about the society. But what happens when somebody dies? So yes, the neighbors, the friends, maybe they will be sad. They will come to the cremation ground. They will be sad for a few days. But is somebody's life stop? Everybody, maybe after 2 hours, as soon as the cremation is done, everybody is back to their normal life. Nobody cares. Maybe they will remember occasionally. But we care so much. We try to mold our lives thinking what other people will think about me. The third wife represents our close family. We take care of the close family also. We don't do sometimes care for the family as much as we think about the others. Oh, मैंने अपने बेटे को इस स्कूल में डाल दिया तो नेबर क्या सोचेगा? मैंने ये गाड़ी खरीदा तो नेबर क्या सोचेगा? What will that person say about me? So we think so much of this thing. We try to neglect sometimes the family members. But yes, we take care of the family members also. When somebody die, family member is the one who are most miserable. They will cry for months and months. Sometimes family is upset. Our near and dear ones are in a miserable situation when anybody die. But after that, everybody gets into the normal life. Is that true or wrong? So who is this fourth wife whom we neglect, but who is always willing to come with us? We are the soul. Soul is living. So who is the fourth wife which is trying to accompany the soul? The super soul, the Paramatma. So Paramatma is sitting in the heart, right, with the soul as a witness. He is sitting there waiting for us to turn to him. But we are always busy with our lives, busy with these factors, which I said, taking care of the properties and society and this, that and our close family. But we are always neglecting the super soul, the Paramatma, the Supreme Lord. We are neglecting that most important aspect, who is taking care of all our needs. Who gives the facility? Who gives the intelligence? Who gives the bodily strength? This is all coming from the Supreme Lord. But we are always neglecting that. Saying, oh, I don't have time for you. Right? I'm too busy with my activities. I don't have time for you. But he is the one who is taking care of all the needs. And he is the most loving friend. He is willing to come with us wherever we go. When we change this body, even if somebody become a dog or a mosquito or a cockroach, he is accompanying that. He does not leave any living entity. He is always accompanying. He knows everybody's past, present and future. So, what is the moral from this story? We need to turn towards the Supreme Lord. We need to mold our lives in such a way that we can give some attention to Paramatma, to the Supreme Lord, who is sitting in the heart as Paramatma, witnessing our activities. And when we do that, then we can move towards the real goal of life. We discuss the real goal of life. What is the real goal of life? We are going into the cycle of birth and death and birth and death. Birth, death, old age, disease, and the cycle keep going on and on and on. Ultimate goal of human life, after attaining the human form of life, the goal should be to come out of this cycle. To attain the spiritual position, the eternal position. Going back to the Supreme Lord. So this human form is a facility to achieve that. But if we don't utilize the human form properly, then we miss that opportunity. So, the real goal, how we can fulfill the real goal of life, if in this lifetime we can turn towards the Supreme Lord, take shelter of the Supreme Lord, engage ourselves in service of the Supreme Lord, then we can ultimately achieve the real goal of life. So, I will stop here. Today's session was overall as a recap. We discussed the topic of who am I, what is my real identity. We are not this body, we are the soul. And what is the proof of soul's existence? Through common sense, through the scientific proof, out-of-body experience, near-death experience, past life memories. And then ultimate proof is the scriptures, right? What scriptures are telling that you are not the body, you are the soul. That is the ultimate praman, shabda praman, the authority of the scriptures. And how the living entity can really attain peace, happiness, is by engaging in the service of the Supreme Lord. And that service should be with love, not by force, and it should be continuous. Not once in a while or once in a year kind of situation. So, with that, I will stop here. If somebody has any questions, comments, if I spoke anything wrong, please forgive me. If I said anything harsh, intention is not to hurt anybody. It's just to express what scriptures are telling, right? To bring ourselves to that level of awareness. So if anybody has any question or comment, Shanmuga Prabhu. No questions? Shanmuga, no question?
Actually, generally speaking, we will say mind. Mind will identify here. Mind is here.
So, mind is here because we are so much conditioned to think this brain is the mind. Right? So, that's why we say, oh, mind is here. Yeah. But
mind is. Man comes here. When we speak in our local language,
man is when we show here, which is the seat of heart of emotions, right? Because man is the place of emotion. And when we say man, we point to the heart. But is that heart, the organ of the heart, which is pumping the blood, is that your man?
Where actually man is? Where actually the organ in this body?
Right, because it's so subtle. You cannot even identify where the mind and intelligence is situated. Now we can see this gross body, but we cannot see the subtle body. But not seeing the subtle body does not mean that does not exist. We cannot even see the subtle body, but it's still there. Right? So
right now I'm holding this and I'm touching something. So I'm feeling two multiple things also, the mind is feeling. So is mind is there everywhere in the body?
Yes, mind is also kind of as a
multitasking.
So your question is, what is the place of mind within this body?
Because when you say it is feeling, thoughts are thoughts means it will again go to the mind. But when you say it is feeling, I have a mobile in hand, I am touching something, the bar. Okay? So I have two feelings right now. Right now the mind is reading two kind of feelings. It can read more feelings also.
No, this mind which we are pointing here, brain, that could be the hardware, right? But the subtle mind is situated within that hardware.
Okay.
It's the, if you open the skull, I cannot say, okay, mind is here. That is the hardware where the mind may be seated. And the mind is the cause of all the emotions, thinking, willing and feeling. It's all coming because of the mind.
Mind is always traveling.
Sorry. When you travel to multiple places,
it's
already 10:12. You started quite late, right? Anybody has any other question? Okay, so thank you. We'll stop here and we'll continue in the next session. So there are two interesting sessions. So I don't know if we're going to cover in the next session or next to next. The which may be very interesting to everybody is why do bad happen things to good people or vice versa. How many of our interested or excited about that topic? Or clicks, how many of you this topic clicks to you? Facebook likes. Okay, so we will not have our regular satsang program next week. Okay, next week is where we have a 4-day kids camp in the temple, Wednesday through Saturday. So I will be busy those 4 days, so Saturday full day I will be in temple, come back by 6 o'clock. It will be hard to have our program also in the evening. So we'll take a break next week and then we'll continue from week after. I don't know if anybody has registered their kids for the kids camp in the temple. It's a very nice opportunity, nice exposure for the kids. It's a kind of a full day camp. Morning 9 o'clock till 4 o'clock.